Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello, good day, good evening, wherever you are on this wonderful planet of ours. Welcome. We are going to be touching into an aspect of history that even today has a very, very profound effect on us. We have got a wonderful guest, Jacqueline Stewart. We are having her back again because she has put out a series of books called Hidden Women. Each and every one of these books, not only do they honor the woman, the female, it is more than that. It is about the history of our ancestors in Europe and the impact, again, that it has on us today. So many times people feel that studying history is just not worth the time, effort, or energy. But if we are willing to study history, many times we can avoid making mistakes that our ancestors did and move forward into a much more positive patterning. Jacqueline Stewart, welcome to the show.
Hello, Donna. It's just wonderful to be here again, and I'm just looking forward so much to talking with you again.
Yes, and this particular aspect of history that you have researched is about the Celtic Burgundy and Europe. And when I opened this up, I'm aware of Burgundy in a very, very small way, but I had no idea about the association with, I call them the Celts, and other people call them the Celts. So, whichever, they're not incorrect, either pronunciation to the best of my knowledge, but there is so much that we still have present today that's been carried forward thousands of years. For those of that have not heard about your other publications and our conversations, give us a little bit of background about how you became interested in researching this and the dynamics that started you on this fascinating aspect of history.
Well, Donna, my early writing career started with the parks of Lake Michigan, at the southern tip of Lake Michigan. And then I wrote two books on France and a book on Slovenia. And I was following a great passion of mine, which is open spaces. As a lawyer, I've worked on open space issues and public lands. And so I gave myself the opportunity to return to the eternal student that I've always wanted to be in researching places that I love and how these public places came to still be preserved today, and looking at who was involved and the history of it in very different aspects, including legal. It appeared as though these things were disjointed, but they started coming together, especially in my fourth book, which I was working on with a German publisher, Axel Mintjes out of Stuttgart, who did just a fabulous job. He's an architect. And the more I looked at Champagne, the more disturbing I saw the history of that area that is not well known at all. And a lot of it had to do with the involvement of women in it, even in the champagne industry itself. And this led me to look further. And so then my next book was going to be Burgundy. So we went to Dijon and where Burgundy is in France now, only to find that actually the last traces of the of government of Burgundy as it was initially set up as a defense unit in this typically Celtic style was up in Belgium, of all things. So Belgium holds a lot of the Burgundian history, as does the Rhineland, because Worms, now in Germany, was the original home of the Burgundian family. It was their capital, and they were heavily into wine, as were the Franks. So, in short, this is a nutshell of why the Franks and Burgundians ourselves. It's looking at them in context in Europe, how they were the ones who drove the Romans out of Europe, because the Romans were enslaving those resident populations. And then together they ruled Europe as the Merovingians. So it all fits together in very unexpected ways. But the more you look, the more you see. And then we just have started to disregard the written accounts, because they're so inconsistent, and they were written for a specific purpose. A lot of it is propaganda, and it's hard to sift what's real and what's not real. So in order to separate out the fiction, we rely on archaeology and follow those threads up. And what we see through archaeology is just an amazingly beautiful civilization that was based on innovation and trade and accomplishment and venerating both men and women for invention and heroics, defense. And the core of it was the defensive family. And we have again and again, and especially in the Burgundian family, you have the whole story of the Nibelungen Lied, which was so long attributed to Germans, but that was the story written, it was written like probably 800, at least 800 years after the fact, and in a different language. So you have to take all these things with a grain of salt. But sifting out the Celtic practices that we are establishing in so many other different ways, we can see that Kriemhild, it's very likely that the story of this woman whose husband was killed by the Romans called up an army and went after the Romans to avenge her husband. She was the leader of that charge, just as Boudica was in Britain, and just as so many other women were who were defending their families. So this is a very common strain that we see again and again, the heroic epics, the heroes' halls, both men and women decorated in gold for their valor and defense of freedom against these Roman attacks who wanted to enslave them again and again and again in different forms throughout history.
Mm-hmm. You have a foreword which I would like to share. It says, the pillars of Celtic culture, that's what women used to be in the days when natural law prevailed, when women were equal and free. Freedom preceded empire. Equality came before caste. Women were not seen as inferior. Family ruled hard and fast. There are many forms of oppression. Religion is certainly one. Where no female gods add balance, males dominate everyone. Celts erased, women blanked out for more than 2,000 years. Devised by an all-male hierarchy achieved with terror and fears. The defining characteristic is, whether they're acolytes or the Caesars, one simple test answers it all: how their women are treated. Life revolves around the children. The struggle matters for them. This is something that in just the last 100 years, we have seen tremendous changes that have evolved in the United States. And because of what you've brought up, the archaeologists, the various aspects relative to the Romans, so the archaeology is bringing forth the exquisite, because of discoveries found, the exquisite metallurgy that the Celtic people had. And you've got in this publication on Celtic Burgundy and Europe that before the 16th century, no manuscripts were known to exist, but there have been 35 that have come to light showing that these people, as you've already stated, were extraordinarily skilled. They were skilled in so many ways. And it's an old story of the human condition where those that want power will take from those that whatever they have, whatever they can take, they have no hesitation of destroying whatever they can. And we've even seen that in modern times, in just the last 30 years, 40 years, 70 years. You know, you want to go back, but in the 20th century, we had a demonstration of that big time. And we still have a demonstration of that even in the 21st century. Things like this going on. It is something with human beings that just makes you shake your head and wonder, when are we going to learn? When are we going to learn? But you have so much information in your book that I think give us an awareness of how we need to be alert today. And you mentioned it earlier about propaganda and how in successive generations to control populations, it was done through, quote unquote, the church presiding and whatever politicians presided, and usually they did not want the population to be able to read. It was against the law for men and women both, unless you were of the higher economic level. You weren't allowed to read. And there is so much that speaks to this ancient culture where they were so talented and it was encouraged to be educated. So your journey has taken you through so much history that I think most of us, when we would hear about it, especially as women living in today's world, we'd go, okay, history needs to be shared a little bit differently than what we have been taught to believe it was.
Absolutely. And so much has been lost through book burnings because the typical way, whether it's the conquistadors in Mexico or in the Philippines or in Europe, is to burn all the books. And all the knowledge that is lost is just horrific. And, of course, not only did they burn books, but they burn women. And this is a very difficult area that I'm following these threads, and they're leading more and more to the witch burnings because more and more information is coming out about them all across Europe. Switzerland has thousands of cases of witch burning that they are uncovering. And it was true in Germany. It was just discovered in a study from 2018 in Slovenia, in Hallstatt in Austria. It was a horrific period for 1,400 years.
Wow, 1,400 years?
It was illegal. For 1,400 years in Europe, it was illegal to have any secular expression. Everything had to be religious, and it was prescribed by the church. So if you deviated, you were a heretic, and you could be killed. Now, the witch burnings went from 13th to 18th centuries, more or less, is what it looks like now. But for 1,400 years, the earliest cases of heresy were like in the 500s, from the 500s up to the 1900s. It is a long time that people lived in fear, because these were horrific, and they were meant to be examples from what we can see, because you come in and you kill the members of the family, the person who's left can no longer function. I mean, they are, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
That is the biggest weapon anybody has, is killing somebody's family. And we see that today. We've seen it in the Nazi era. We've seen it in mafia. It's not the you can torture a person to within an inch of their lives, but lay a hand on their family member, especially a child, and that's it. And this is something that was learned very early on by these people who were carrying out atrocities on a massive scale. The slaughters and the enslavements went on with this basic premise in mind. We can get anything out of these people if we threaten their family.
Mm-hmm. In fact, you make the statement that Europe was terrorized and enslaved under feudal regimes. Anybody that studies history will see that evidence so very, very strongly. And it just is really real. I was so intrigued in your history that you share about Burgundy and hydrology, and how the Celtic people in those lands, they had amazing skills regarding water. Share with us what they did.
And when you look at a map now, if you just look at the water and the way the water looks in a particular area, You can see, especially if you take into account the topology, you can see often the part that a lot has been done that wasn't natural. And the reason we started on this particular view of especially the Burgundians is that we were seeing these when there's a loop in the river, and if there's a lot of Celtic naming in the area, you can pretty much bet that you're going to have an abbey or a wonderful big fest hall that's now been changed into a cathedral. But those sit on promontories in these loops in the river. Novo Mesto in Slovenia is an amazing example of this, the loop that protects a very ancient settlement. But if you look at these more closely, not all of these loops are following the natural topography of the land. Some of those loops are acting like moats and have been made for that purpose. Because when you're sitting up in a loop in the river, you can see anybody crossing the river from all around you. So you put a tower up, and you put somebody in that tower to watch and check who's coming and going. So it's a way to really guard that is amazing. The same thing with an island of the river. But islands of the river often hold ruins, especially of ancient either abbeys or castles or fest halls, former fest halls.
Also, I was intrigued with Burgundy and their health centers. This was something in the 15th century, you wouldn't have thought that was really very common. I know in the Middle Eastern culture with the Arabs, they had many generations where they had established medical clinics so that people could come and get care and well-being. But the Europeans were really way, way, way behind in that. But with the Celts, they really ended up being very, very much aware of how important wellness was. When did these health centers start being developed?
We see them for sure in the 15th century. It's so hard, so much has been destroyed, that until the 12th century, you have very little to look at. Beginning the 12th century, there was an edict that came out dissuaded people from destroying, but rather reusing, because people saw the value of these building skills, there was a lot more interaction between the Arab world and Europe that we see. And there were, because of the trade involved not only commodities, but ideas. And health care was always very important to the South, especially medicinal plants from the very earliest times. We see that in the Iron Age evidence of herbs, medicinal herbs. And in the tapestries, the mille fleurs are herbs. So that has always been a big... Oh, and one of the most astounding things that we saw up in Austria near the Czech border was a skull that had a brain operation.
Interesting.
It was amazing to see that work done on the skull of an Iron Age. And they had the medical instruments there that were used. It was stunning to think that people were operating on the skull in the Iron Age. But there was that transmission of ideas concerning medicine. And not only just a hospital, but a village, a health village. So you had the kitchens and the hearth and the... It was a fully functioning village and self-sustaining, these health clinics. We've seen them in Bone, of course. There's that wonderful one that's from the 12th century. But in Lille and in other parts, especially of where the Dukes of Burgundy was under their duchy, they had amazing facilities, beautiful, beautifully done. And of course, you look up at the ceilings always, even in the infirmaries or in the kitchens or any place. You look up at those ceilings, and they are gorgeous. That is one way of seeing cells.
Mm-hmm.
The meticulous construction and decoration of the rafters and the rhythmical quality and the mathematical precision. These people were terrific architects and engineers, and they shared that information very readily, one to the next.
Mm-hmm. And that's very significant. Also, we mentioned just a few minutes ago about books, about education, and there is a woman, and please correct me if I mispronounce her name, Christine de Pizan, and this is a woman. She was widowed, had three children, and she took the Christian organizations to task because they were saying that women couldn't get into heaven and were just absolutely derogatory towards women, and she just fought back with her pen, and it was because of Duchess Marie of Burgundy and her writer and poet daughter, Duchess Marguerite of Austria, and Governor Marie of Hungary and Bohemia. They were three defense officials in the Duchy of Burgundy. These women saved manuscripts. They refused to destroy stuff, hiding them, and eventually they were discovered. And this is just amazing history.
It is fabulous. Christine de Pizan wrote A History of Women. She, her book, it was part of the collection that was saved by Marie of Burgundy, part of that, the Duchy's collection. And it was kept in Spain for a long period of time, or else it would have been burned. And the illuminations in these manuscripts are absolutely breathtakingly beautiful. One of the most well known in this collection that was saved is the Très Belle, Très Richeur de Duc de Berry, the Duke of Berry's It's like a calendar. It's showing the what you do in each month of the year, and the with absolutely gorgeous colors and compositions, and even in there you see in winter a woman sitting with her feet in hot water because she's at the thermal baths. In the winter you go to the hot springs. That was part of the rhythm of Europe. Wherever you might be, you knew where all the hot springs were because that was the way people survived through the winter very comfortably.
Mm-hmm. Burgundy.
But that collection, that collection of the Burgundy Library from the 15th century is fabulous. It is in the in Brussels at the State Library, and there's a whole library now that has been developed around that collection, because obviously you can't walk in and look at those books on the shelf. So you look at what's being reported about them, the beauty of the tapestry. There are a lot of tapestries as part of that collection as well. The tapestries and the illuminated manuscripts are breathtaking.
Well, I think that with all of this information, I hope they digitize a lot of this so the people around the world can have access to it, because it opens up our minds and understandings about how we really need to question a lot of things that are still accepted from those time periods that really enslaved people. Mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, and how we need to be aware of that thinking and how sadly, in some respects, it's still being carried forward. There is Burgundy and Hero Halls, and there is a magnificent illustration about a man and a woman, and they're standing side by side. They are as equals, and they obviously are of royalty. I mean, it's just absolutely gorgeous. Tell us about these Hero Halls.
If I could just interrupt, I don't think they're royalty, because royalty went with the empires, and the empires overtook the language of ducks, of duchies and duchesses and dukes and so on. These were probably a duke and duchess in charged with the defense of that duchy who had died defending. And often you see the castle at their feet, and you see gold jewelry and the shields identifying which family they're with, so in battle the families can see each other. And often with crowns, because they have died defending. Mm-hmm. So the gold in these depictions becomes extremely important, and every element has significance. Whether finding out what the significance is the next quest.
This is just an amazing book, and your visuals in here, your photography of different areas of Burgundy. When someone is traveling, and we're not doing it very much right now because of the COVID situation, however, people, when they go into these areas of the country and Europe, your books, Hidden Women, when one reads them, one wants to explore more. And I really think that the information about Charlemagne, how he was known as a champion of learning, and this is a commentary that you have here that I wanted to share with my audience. Women must never doubt their importance to each other or to humanity as a whole. Women are naturally essential to life and living. Anyone who degrades women is seeking to weaken families for a reason. Division is the age-old military strategy for overtaking prosperous people. Remember our radiant relatives, strong and capable, who have stood up to conquerors and abusers. Gracious but unbending, they defended those they loved. May their example ever inspire us, and may we lead our worlds to sanctuary. The information you have in your books, the again, the reproductions that are in here of the women, they're obviously women that were highly respected, appreciated, and loved, and they held positions of authority and power. Your books, and there's four in these series, they convey so much in the beauty of the art and the tapestries. It's just breathtaking. Jacqueline, you have a website, hiddenwomenbooks.com, and I know they're going to find a lot of information on that website. You also have been giving information about certain movies that have been made. Am I correct?
We're actually making movies now. We make clips of usually about 15 minutes. The one that we just came out with is about Hallstatt and the women who are honored there. So it fits right within this topic. But what we're trying to do is to convey as much of the beauty of this world as we possibly can. And filming, where you can go to the website and just click on a YouTube link and see a 15-minute speaking and photography and the whole thing. I think it makes it live in a very convincing way. And so I would love for we're slicing this in as many ways as we can. To make it easier to understand, but in the process, we learn immense things, and it takes us further and further into the subject, and it is a very exciting adventure, and I'd invite all of your listeners to join us, and it's so wonderful to be able to talk with you about it. Donna, thank you again so much for this super opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'll tell you, Jacqueline Stewart, I have learned so much about the history of Europe and how so much of what went on then was passed along to our ancestors, and a lot of those patternings of thinking and attitudes continue in many respects even today. We still have to be attentive to that, because there are always those that feel that they need to take that tyrannical positioning. And as some very famous people have said more than once, when you take away the education of the women, when you demean the women, you also demean the families, and the men suffer just as much. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's so very, very important. So your whole series that you have to date, there's four books, Hidden Women. This one we've discussed is about Celtic Burgundy and Europe. Thank you, Jacqueline. And do keep me appraised of your latest research.
Thank you so much, Donna. All the best to you.
Thank you, Jacqueline. Same to you. This is Donna Sebo. And by the way, check out Hidden Women Books. .com. That's Jacqueline's website, hiddenwomenbooks.com. Now, we're going to be taking a break here. We'll be back in just a little bit. I do want to let you know that the phone line is open if you would like to chat with me, 253-582-5597. We've got a lot of good things to share with you for this evening, so thank you for joining me. We'll be right back. The Donna Sebo Show is heard weekdays, Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. Callers are welcome to call in during the second half of the program at 253-582-5597. Please note that the announcement is made at the bottom of the hour if I'm not in studio able to take phone calls. Warriors for Peace is heard every Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. For current information regarding my email newsletter, programming, and appearances, go to DelphiInternational.com. For information on publications, including my award-winning children's books, audiobooks, and more, go to Mrs. Sebo's Classics.com. This is Donna Sebo. If you or someone you know is an author and would like to be interviewed on The Donna Sebo Show or Warriors for Peace, please send a copy of the publication along with contact information, phone number, email, and website to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. That's The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. Please allow 6 to 8 weeks for review. Thank you. We have a wonderful lineup this week. Now, tomorrow. Yes, tomorrow's a doubleheader. Remember, every Wednesday is that way. We're going to be talking with Dr. Fortoraro, and she is in St. Croix. That is an island in the Virgin Islands parts of the world. And it's all about how God came to her garage sale. Then we are also on Warriors for Peace. And remember, Warriors for Peace is from 7 to 8 p.m. We're going to be talking with Dr. Mark Schillinger. And this is about a man who's called the Teen Whisperer, challenging the challenging aspects of teenage sons. It's about a program he's worked with for 15 years to help young men learn how to make the rite of passage into adulthood. I think you'll find it very, very interesting. It is our current day, and it's done in a modern way, if you will. But also, who we're going to be talking to is Judith Halbreck, about a woman in her family, her mother, in fact, and it is about her. The book is titled The Audacity to Be Divine. I think it'll be a surprise to you how that evolves. And then Healing Childhood Trauma, and then bingo! We're in March, and we're going to be finding out about a woman by the name of Trish. Alan Klein writes about the awe factor, macular degeneration that affects so many people. They can be of all ages, but so often it is with the elderly. Doris Pollock is going to be talking about, and then exploring wine regions, the Bordeaux region in France. Michael Higgins. Oh, this is just amazing what he's put together. And then Sophia Goebel. This is a woman who is skilled in old book restorations. In her publication, Book Restoration Unveiled, I think if you have any old books that you treasure and they're falling apart, wow, we're going to be able to share with you some pretty significant information. All of this and more, of course, is up on my website, and you just go to DelphiInternational.com or MrsSebosClassics.com, and you'll find the connections there. But what happens, too, is I know everybody's got a crazy schedule. Everybody's busy. Some of us are starting to go back to work again, which is wonderful. And you may say, gee, I can't listen to you when you're on the air at the time that you're on Pacific time, which is 8 to 9 p.m., and then on Wednesdays, Warriors for Peace is 7 to 8 p.m., But you know what? If you like us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, my assistant Deb will keep you informed about the people coming on the show. And then you can go in and listen to the player. Put the player on. There's the latest 13 to 15 hours of programming that's always available to you. And, of course, there are the archives, so you have the opportunity to check those out as well. Don't forget that as soon as I am in a position to let you know about any public appearances, I will be doing that. I had mentioned that the women's show here in the Pacific Northwest was going to be coming up in September, but they have canceled it. I received information, so it is going to be done in March of 2022. Yes, and that's just because we are still not out of the woods yet with the dictates of isolation, lockdowns, and this is something that may still be going on for a while. So to put together big events, well, it takes sometimes a year to do that. So they're preparing for March 2022. So I did want to let you know about that. Pablo Casal, he made a statement that I thought I would share with you this evening because I really like it. It's titled, You Are a Marvel. This is what Pablo said. Each second we live is a new and unique moment of the universe. a moment that will never be again. And what do we teach our children? We teach them that 2 and 2 make 4 and that Paris is the capital of France. When will we also teach them what they are? We should say to each of them, do you know what you are? You are a marvel. You are unique. In all the years that have passed, there's never been another child like you. Your legs, your arms, your clever fingers, the way you move. You may become a Shakespeare, a Michelangelo, a Beethoven. You have the capacity for anything. Yes, you are a marvel. And when you grow up, can you then harm another who is just like you, a marvel? You must work, we must all work, to make the world worthy of its children. I thought that that was just such a lovely statement, because if we were able to give that gift to a child and say, you are a marvel, you have your own talents, giving that gift to the child and then not slamming them down with, but you're really stupid when it comes to doing scrambled eggs. You don't need to do that. Just appreciating them in a moment. We all need to learn how to do various things in various ways because of culture, societal norms, etc. But to be able to put that seed within a child, that they are unique, that they are special, that they are here to play a certain role in life that is uniquely their own, that is empowering them. And I don't know that you can do that unless you do that for yourself as well. Every person I've ever had on my show has always been a contributor to the betterment of life. I am so pleased to be able to do what I do. It enables me to refresh my own mind and my own environment with the awareness that every moment is a new moment. And you never know when there's going to be that something special that's going to make you aware of who you really are and what it is you are so skilled at doing and that you can bring to the table, the banquet table of life, so that this life is made richer by who you are. You can become rich and famous. Some people, that's all they aspire for. Well, that's fine if that's what you want to do. But there is something else that I think is so special about the right of choice. And that is, you may be happy cooking for the homeless. I did an interview with a 5-star chef who decided that that is what he really wanted to do more than working for high-end restaurants. And he was feeding all kinds of people. He made friends. He was happy. I've known other people through the development of their businesses, how they've been able to make life so much better for people. I think of one gentleman that invented a certain medical apparatus that allowed people to survive particular physical traumas that otherwise they would have died from. His satisfaction is research and development and working with other people who have the same type of feel in that particular area. We have people that want to, just like my guest, Jacqueline Stewart, finding out more what our ancestral lineages are, why certain things have evolved, bringing to the forefront knowledge that maybe has been suppressed for centuries. All of this is wonderful. And there are those that their total commitment is to their families. That is their job. And then after their families are grown, they end up going over to something else that maybe they have sort of put a cap on because their families came first. So there's so many different arenas of opportunity in life. And when we're true to ourselves, when we are willing to be a part of this experience of life and have an enthusiasm about it and sort of be like a child saying, ooh, I wonder what this is all about. or taking the time to talk to a perfect stranger, smiling at someone without, you know, just saying, hi, have a good day. Remembering to say thank you to someone that does something nice for you, or remembering somebody in a special way, just saying, I want you to know you were on my mind and I wanted to chat with you. How are you doing? All of these things are important. You are important. And when you can say, yes, I am, it's not being arrogant. It's acknowledging that beauty, that light that is within you, that only you have. And that is significant. Donna Sebo here, 253-582-5597. Candles. My goodness, if ever you've gone through a power outage and you have no electricity, and maybe you forgot to replace the batteries in your flashlight, or if it's an outage that lasts for a long time, your batteries run out, and you go, uh-oh, we need light. What have you got? Candles. Candles are very significant, and they are still extraordinarily popular. And in our world today, of course, we have the fragrant candles, and there are those candles that are used for religious purposes. But there's a lot of mystery that's surrounding candles. And I was surprised to find out about various superstitions regarding candles. Now, one of the superstitions is that you need to be aware of a candle when it blows out during a ceremony and when there's no open doors, anything like that. Because the superstition is, it's a warning that something is perhaps around you that shouldn't be there, and you need to pay attention to what's going on. Oh, and three lit candles in a row are considered bad luck. Now, I don't know what cultures these come from. So be sure to blow one out if you see them lined up, three in a row. And then light a candle inside a jack-o'-lantern on Halloween to guard against the evil spirits that are lurking about. Now, that goes back a long way in time frame. And if you look into a mirror by candlelight, you not only risk giving yourself bad luck, but you may also find the souls of the dead. And then a corpse candle. I don't think we do corpse candles anymore, but these are old superstitions. A corpse candle is a small, sourceless flame that floats through the night air and is believed to be a lost soul. Wonder what country that came from. And they say if you see that floating flame, it's considered an omen. Means that someone is going to be passing away. So many different things that come from different cultures that come in and just sort of captivate us. And there was a man by the name of Titus Livy. He said, superstition brings the gods into even the smallest matters. And remember what I just mentioned about mirrors? Well, mirrors have been around for a long time. And a long time ago, when people would look at their reflections in water, the water acted as a mirror. And they thought, wow, I'm glimpsing a separate part of myself. This is my soul. And whenever the reflected image was altered by waves or ripples, they thought that something was wrong, that maybe their soul was in danger. Now, over time, that particular level of belief morphed into a belief that if someone broke a mirror, it would take 7 years for their soul to return to them. Have you heard of it? Gee, if you break a mirror, you got 7 years of bad luck? It's related to this. There's all of these little adaptations that take place when things become a little bit, as I would say, modernized. And the term of 7 years was actually established by the Romans, who believed it took a body 7 years to repair itself. Where they got that, I don't know. So it just evolved into what I just said. Breaking a mirror means 7 years of bad luck. Now, there's another superstition that said should a mirror fall and break on its own, a death in the home is soon to be expected, even if the house where the mirror breaks is thought, you know, to not enjoy good luck for 7 years. And looking at your reflection in a mirror, like I just mentioned, by candlelight, is also said to bring bad luck. Well, if that's the case, I think tens of thousands of people would have not had a very, very happy life, because we had candlelight as a source of light for many people for a long, long time. Anyway, that's just a little bit of history on superstitions and how people will sometimes adopt those belief systems. And you know what happens when you get stuck in that? Then you actually are giving a lot of energy to what you don't want to happen. Donna Sebo here, 253-582-5597. I wanted to share with you some information about dogs. And I know that you are aware of how dogs are used to find people. And there's just so many, many, many different ways that dogs have been trained to do different things. It took a while for us to really understand it, because it just didn't seem for many people like it was worthwhile to be able to train these very, very special animals. And the truth is, it was worthwhile, it is worthwhile, and it continually is something we are working with, because we are discovering that they are very, very capable of doing a lot more than we ever imagined. Now, one of the biggest areas that has come up, I'd say especially the last 10 years, we know about the dogs that have served the military and how they can be trained to find mines and all kinds of things. Well, it takes a while to train these animals. And there is a Penn Vet Working Dog Center, and one of the dogs that came from a particular breeder, he said, the man that was in charge, his name is D'Angelo, he said, we have to have dogs that come from working lines, not show or pet lines, but one that has the hunt prey drive. And there is a dog, and the dog's name was Osa, and she was taking training in obedience and agility. She was just 2 months old. And then she was advanced to basic odor detection skill training. And they find that this training enables the animals to learn how to recognize whatever it is they're supposed to recognize. Now, in some cases, it might have to do with cancer. Other cases, it will be something else. And I've heard a number of stories from people that have service dogs that find that they're service dogs because of the way that they're trained. If there is something wrong with them, for example, if they have epilepsy, the dog will recognize, and there is almost like an electrical frequency that is put off by the body. The animals recognize it, and they will force that person to lay down or to stay quiet. And they'll have their own way of getting that communication across to the person. And so if that person has a seizure, then they're not going to harm themselves. They're not going to fall, or, you know, maybe they're cooking, all of a sudden they'll have a seizure and something hot could fall on them. There's just so many different scenarios they could go through. Well, they've used dogs with drug detection. They just do all kinds of things, but not all dogs are going to be suitable for this. And this particular characterization of what is described as the hunt prey drive is very significant, because it makes a tremendous difference. And they have to have very, you know, really a great deal of patience in training these animals. And they find that some dogs do better at detecting certain things than other dogs do. And as it turned out, Osa was able to detect cancer. And they use actual cells so that the animal can tell which one is which, because they also use a dummy situation. And Osa just did everything perfectly. She had that capability, however that manifests, to be able to detect cancers. And whether a cancer is going to be spreading or whatever, it is really, truly amazing. And what they're trying to do now, because of their success with dogs, they're trying to see if they can develop an electronic nose that would enable a physician to do an evaluation of a patient to see if there were cancer cells present that needed to be eliminated. And it is, you know, here's all of this thinking that's going on, utilizing the skills of the animals to achieve what we would have thought quite a while ago, not all that long ago, that would never be possible. But really, it is. And what they say is that the dogs, this is like a game to them. So they enjoy doing it. And if you've been at the airport, as I have been, of course, it's not been recent, but last year when I was at the airport, they had dogs that were at the airport that would walk right along. You were told, do not touch the dog. The dog is in training. They were wearing their particular doggy vest. It had big letters on it, do not touch. And that dog, young dog, was being trained to do a certain kind of work. Now, I don't know if it was looking for drugs. We don't have any idea. But they were walking this dog, and this dog was obviously sniffing. And when you think of the myriad of odors, everything from deodorant to women's cologne, men's cologne, to different foods, there are a bazillion odors that are out there that these dogs have to sift through. And their sense of smell is just, I don't know, thousands of times more than ours. It's incredible. But I thought, this is really something very special. And it's evolving to a level where we're trying to find what other areas this can be applied to, the knowledge they're receiving from our canine friends. Donna Sebo here. Well, we are coming to the end of the show, and my goodness, it's always a delight to share information with you. I hope you'll pass the information about the programming along to your friends. Remind them of the time frame, and should they ever want to talk with me live online, they can do it when I am in studio. But remember, too, that you're significant. Remember always that whatever it is that you choose to do in your life, it is your choice. Don't ever feel that you cannot step into arenas of skill, adventuresome exploration into levels of knowledge. It is so important for you to know that. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You're in charge of your space, your life, and that's important. We're going to be getting out of this COVID situation slowly but surely. I'm seeing a lot of people already being able to go back to work and making a decision that they're not going to be isolated anymore. They're saying enough with the fear. We have situations going on with the weather in different parts of the country at this time that are really a challenge for millions of people, but that too shall pass. Here in the Pacific Northwest, spring is showing her face really a lot earlier than we expected, even though we had a couple of days of snow. Yes, spring is here, and we are seeing daffodils coming up, tulips are coming up, and we're going to have a world of color in our natural environment, and I am just so ready for it. How about you? Take care, God bless, be well, and turn that light on inside of you, won't you? Let it shine. Don't be afraid to smile, and above all, be grateful for the blessings that you have in your life. Things are going to get better. This is Donna Sebo. Bye for now.
been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.